Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could join us tonight. I have a few things that I'd like to talk about tonight. One of them is the fact that it's come to my attention from a new website called Workplace Bullying that someone sent me today, that there's more adults being bullied today than I even had imagined. I have learned that some people have been in that position for their whole life. And I've mulled that over all afternoon, trying to think of what I could say to somebody who has been being bullied for that length of time. So I called some friends, people that I know quite well, and I'm going to share a couple stories. One is a female, and she's young, and she's tiny. And she said in her lifetime, because she's been a businesswoman and she's been in a position to get people to do work for her, contractors, etc., big, burly kind of guys, the ones that we automatically envision when we think of a bully, have done work for her. It's been inadequate. And when she's called them on it, they have been, first of all, boorish, and then a bully. And on a couple occasions, even started stalking her when she wouldn't pay them for work that wasn't completed or work that was done unwell. So I said, "What did you do?" And again, this is, we're talking about somebody who's pretty small. And she said, I got some help from a local police station. I went and talked to some detectives, and they actually helped me. So I'm going to put that out there. I don't know where all of you live. I don't know what your chances are of finding a detective that can step up for you. But I thought it was a good suggestion, so I'm going to put it out there so you can do a little research on your own rather than just going to the police, who have incredibly busy schedules, et cetera. Detectives, I guess, have a little bit different kind of work schedule, and I don't know that for a fact. I'm just assuming that. But if you could go someplace like that and talk to a detective, and give them the story, maybe they could help you a little bit. Now, someone else I spoke to, who is also a female, told me that very recently she was bullied in a public place and actually came fisticuffs. And that blew me away. I was like, "You're kidding me," because I know this person, and I was like astounded, dumbfounded. And she said that she was in a public place and someone kept pushing her, another female, and she turned around and she pushed back after the third or fourth time of this person pushing her. She pushed back and then got pushed back by the other lady. And so ended up, both of them, taking swings at each other, until somebody else stopped it. But the woman left her alone. Now, I'm not of the mindset to tell people to resort to fighting or even worse in some instances. I'd like to think that words are more valuable to us than punching and hitting. I'd like to think that words are stronger, and I'd like to think that as human beings, not as lions and tigers and bears, oh my, that we should be able to talk to each other and fix something that isn't working the way we think it should be working. However, if you've exhausted all of those things, and if you've gotten yourself to a place, and if you're a young person, maybe, you know, under the age of 13, and you're kind of small, we did mention the other night about taking some classes in self-defense. And, of course, if you take a class in self-defense, somebody's more or less telling you to fight back. And, again, I'm not going to take that stand because I think there's too much of that going on now. But I do want to say that you always should feel secure and safe. So a class in self-defense, or even telling yourself that if need be, you can fight back, so that it gives you some more security within your own soul, then I'm with you 100%. To use that as your first alternative, to use physical violence, I think is wrong. I think first there should be some attempts to do this in a civil manner. And I know there's people out there that are shaking their head, that are saying, you know, are you going to say to us that if somebody punched you, that, you know, your instinct would be to say, oh, please don't do that again? Well, first of all, if you don't know me and you've never seen me, people don't accost me very much because I'm a big woman and have been one since I was 14 years old. So to be honest with you, I've never been in that position. So I'm going to say that I have been bullied verbally. I talked about it last night. And I have been bullied since I was very young because I was big. They called me the Jolly Green Giant. They called me other names like that. I don't remember, and I could have blacked them out because I'm good like that about forgetting things that really hurt me too badly. I don't ever remember being called fatso or things like that, which are more hurtful. But I've had my share of people picking on me, but nobody really accosts me because I'm a big woman and I'm strong. Even at 64 years of age, I'm still pretty good shape like that. So I've never had to deal with that. However, if you're tiny and somebody's picking on you and there's nobody else to stick up for you, then I do think a class like that is a good idea. And I do think if you're an adult and you're going through that kind of thing, you're going through anything that jeopardizes your safety, then you need to get some professional attention. And since it was suggested to me that instead of just going to the police and making a report, asking for a private meeting with a detective and explaining it to the detective. Now, I don't know what kind of work is involved in that, but you could try that. Give that a shot. And this website that I found today was very interesting, and there's a lot of people on it, shockingly so. So that might be something you could do as well. If you can't find it, you can get on my Facebook page. You know, friend me. I don't turn any friends away. And you can look it up on my Facebook page because it was sent to me today. Now, I'm going to bring Shelly in. Shelly has joined us. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Reen.
How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I found some of the things you said very interesting already. I do have two comments to add to what you were talking about. First of all, with regard to going to the police, absolutely 100% a good idea. I know of a volatile situation that somebody close to me was in recently, and they were able to utilize the Palm Beach Sheriff's Department to assist them with a very volatile situation with somebody that was being very threatening to them. And,
no.
I mean, let's put it this way. The person was so out of control that they actually threatened them in front of the sheriff.
Wow.
That's how out of control this person is. They weren't even behaving themselves when the police were there. So it was all documented. The police, obviously, there were two squad cars. There were a total of four police were there because the first officer ended up calling another squad car. So it was all diffused, and there has been no incident since then. This had happened about 2 months ago. So it actually did diffuse the situation, and now the person knows that there's been a formal report written on them. The police were very, very adamant towards this person that they had to cease and desist. And although they were belligerent in the beginning, they did end up coming into line, and there has been no further there has been no further harassment from that point forward. So it was very effective. All right.
Well, that's good news. Then I'm not glad that somebody you care about was in that position, but I am glad that you have that to report and that that there was you know, some positive reaction, and that's great news. That's great news.
And one of the things that I will recommend about that, and I had mentioned this one of the other nights we were talking on another subject, but it's the same advice. The people that went to the sheriff were very, very calm and reasonable. They weren't hysterical. They didn't go in there bad-mouthing the other person. They just said, look, this is the situation we're in. This was a business deal gone bad, and now this person is hysterical and they're threatening us. And they very calmly explained their position. They didn't go in there melodramatically. They didn't go in there with hysterics or making demands. They went in there very respectfully for the officer's time. And because of that, they got a positive reaction. You know, so it's very, very important that you don't give in to melodrama or that you give in to overplaying your role. If it's serious, just come right out and say it's serious, but say it in a controlled manner so that they can see you're not the one who's creating the situation, that you truly are the one who is the recipient of the bad behavior and not the one causing it or creating it to come into your experience.
In other words, you're explaining to all of us that if you present your case in a very mature and professional manner, more people are going to pay attention to you.
Exactly.
But if you go in hysterical and ranting and raving, then they're going to wonder if you're the reason there's a problem.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was getting at. Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
So, and that's great advice. That's actually great advice in almost every scenario that we do. Almost every scenario that we do has something to do with your demeanor,
exactly.
The way you handle things, the way you talk to people, etc. Someone else has just, a couple people have called in, but somebody wants to enter into the conversation. I'm going to bring them in. Hello. Hi. Yeah.
It's Mike.
Mikey. I don't recognize your new phone number. Do you want to talk or did you just want to listen, Michael?
I just want to listen, Mike.
Okay. All right. Enjoy the show.
Yep.
So, at any rate, I think that your advice is good, and I love the fact that you have a positive scenario to report in regard to going to somebody to help. Because let's face it, today there's lots of stuff out there that is scary, very scary, because people can be armed with any number of weapons. They can be armed with a gun, God forbid. They can be armed with a knife. They can be armed with anything that can really cause permanent, if you know what I mean, damage. So be smart and be professional. But do get help if that's really what's needed. Now, if you are in a place where you think somebody has been harassing you for a very long time and isn't leaving you alone, I hope if it's been going on for any length of time that you've turned that into someone. And if you haven't, and there's some fear involved there, and you need to talk, you can call, you can talk on the show, you can call and say you want to talk to me privately just so that you can get another ear to hear if you don't have anybody that you can talk to. Please don't let this keep on going, because the stories that we read and the information that we get out there in the news and on the media don't put yourself in that kind of a place. Keep yourself safe at all times, no matter what else is going on. Now, this workplace bullying, which I find incredibly interesting, and if you'll recall, a couple weeks ago, I read some of the information on the website that I pulled up about workplace bullying and some of the tests that they've done in different countries in regard to serial killers and all this kind of stuff. It was very interesting. And it tells you that workplace bullying can be very, very dangerous. For one thing, if you allow, just because you think that if you just leave something alone, it's going to go away, if you allow somebody to keep spreading rumors, talking gossip about you, that's a form of bullying, you must stop it, because eventually somebody will believe them. And that's a cold, hard fact, but eventually somebody will believe them, and you don't want that. So if you, I'm that way, I think, who's going to believe that about me? I wouldn't do anything like that. But there's a lot of people that don't know me well enough to know whether I'd do that or not. So please use common sense in regard to that. And please understand that you have alternatives if somebody is talking bad about you and spreading rumors about you. Now, this lady that I spoke to, she made no bones about it because, like I said, she's been in business for herself. She's built homes. She's remodeled places and stuff. So, of course, she's dealing in a men's world. And because she's a little tiny woman, she thinks, or they think, that they can get the upper hand. And she didn't allow it. So if it's happening to you, don't allow it. But be smart. Be professional. Be smart. Think, you know, make yourself understand exactly what's going on and plan it out in your head before you go and talk to anybody so that you are taken seriously. Did I lose you, Shelley?
You lost me before.
I know. I got you back, though, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
I never heard the phone go unmuted, so I wasn't sure I was back on yet or not.
Yeah. You're back on. You're back on.
I have a story that just happened to me recently at another company I was working at that falls in line with what you're talking about as far as, like, not letting it go. But before I get into that, I wanted to comment on something you said at the beginning of the show, and then that's when my phone decided to disconnect me. So,
okay.
But you were talking about self-defense classes. And
yes.
One of the things I want to say about that is, number one, I completely agree with you with regard to that any physical reaction to somebody should always be a last resort. I've actually been in a store and had somebody pushing on me and something like that, and I won't push back. I'll just turn around and I'll say, excuse me, you know, could you please watch yourself? And I actually had a woman, this was about a year and a half ago, I actually had a woman who refused to, like, stop pushing on me, and I could tell if somebody's going to do that, then a little radar goes up with me, a little red flag says this person is not stable. Because they're looking for a fight, and I just decided to ignore it, pay for my stuff, and left. That doesn't make me cowardly. That doesn't make me a weakling. That makes me somebody that wants to control my environment, and I didn't want a free-for-all in the middle of a grocery store with other people. It was obvious this woman was angry about something and looking for a place to vent it. That's how I took it. So I just decided not to react because it was obvious that this woman was looking to vent, and I wasn't going to give her the outlet. So that was one thing that had happened to me. But with regard to self-defense classes, the point of them is not so that you can beat somebody up or prevent them from beating you up. It's to have a way of carrying yourself with confidence that people will, believe it or not, pick up on it. And they will not approach you the same way as if you don't have that level of confidence. It's almost like people can sense it from you. Because I've taken martial arts. I've taken jiu-jitsu. I've taken kung fu. I never got...
No wonder I never messed with you.
Yeah. You know, and in every martial arts class I ever took, They all teach the same thing. It's only to be used when you have no choice. When you're cornered, you can't get away from the person. If there's 10 feet between you and the person, you know what? You have time to drop and run and get away from them. And that's what they teach. That doesn't make you cowardly. That makes you somebody who's in control of your environment and doesn't want to go into fisticuffs, because you may end up really hurting that other person. And that's not what it's about. It's about keeping yourself safe. And if you can run, you run. That makes you smart. It does not make you a coward. And so that's kind of the point I wanted to make about that. Taking self-defense classes, taking martial arts, is to develop a confident mindset that if you have to, you can defend yourself. But
exactly.
99 times out of 100, you're not going to need it. You're just going to have that sense about you, and people will pick it up from you and leave you alone. Now, you know I'm fairly small, and yet people don't mess with me because I have that air of confidence, because I don't worry about it.
And that's pretty much what I said as well, although I'm glad you put it in different words. It is about reassuring yourself with your own self-confidence. That's what defense classes are about. It's to make you feel safe, because then you don't slip into that victim mode that we've talked about so many different times, and you don't into that place where you get fearful. Because I'll tell you, anger and fear make you do really dumb things.
Absolutely.
You know, exactly. So if you can do something that secures you inside, makes you feel like you can, if something does happen, so somebody's picking on you, but, you know, you're dealing with it, and you're dealing with it. So you do some of these classes just in case, and it keeps your courage, you know, up there where it needs to be. It keeps your courage in a place that makes you feel secure and okay with your surroundings, especially if you, even if you're in a tough neighborhood. Let's say you're a 16-year-old and you grew up in small town Illinois, like our friend John, and all of a sudden you've moved to Miami and you're living in Hialeah.
Yeah, right.
And you're walking the streets and everybody's looking at you and you're different and you're new and everything, and nobody said anything to you. But the more secure you are, it makes itself known by the way you walk, by the way you look at people, by the way you're not afraid to meet a person's glance or eye to eye with somebody when you walk past them on the street. All those things tell other people that you are not a target.
Exactly.
And those kind of classes give you that reinforcement. So they're very, very wise. And again, this goes back to some of the things that we've talked about this week. This week we've talked about gangs. We've talked about church groups. We talked about that lovely letter from the woman who organized the girls group for her daughter, so that her daughter had a safe zone. And it's all about the same thing. And there's, thank God, there's so many different ways to make you feel safe. And the truth is, it depends on what kind of a person you are.
Of course.
If a defense class gives you that personal security that you're in search of, you should do it hands down. Plus that it's good for your body. It's good for your physical body. The exercise and the control and all that kind of stuff. And you're right. Any class I have ever watched with the kids, or anything I've ever seen on television or anything, if it's, well, like at Hippocrates, we learned about Tai Chi and all those kind of things that are really meditation. They're body meditation. They relax somebody's body, but they also make somebody very limber, very strong, very quick-footed. And that's good for everybody. So
it's emotionally reasonable, because it teaches you a different mindset. It teaches you how to respond to things that are happening to you differently than if you hadn't taken those classes. You know, like, for instance, with the woman pushing me in the store. Now, 20 years ago, I would have pushed her back. But because of different things that have happened to me, because of taking classes like that, because of thinking about it differently now, I don't feel cowardly. Now I actually feel braver by making the choice not to push back, because it's so easy to go the other way around. It actually takes more bravery not to care that other people might think I'm a coward, because, I'm controlling my environment, and I'm controlling the environment around me. I don't want to put that woman in a position of making me harm her, because I know I'm strong enough where I could defend my dad, and I choose not to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I know that if I had no choice, I would be able to, so it makes it easy for me not to make the choice. And then that's kind of the point.
Right. And that is a big part of your own personal safety.
Right.
And that's, of
right.
course, the other thing is your mindset. Like I said before, if it gives you a personal sense of security, that's all that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a kid, some of the schools offer a lot of classes like that, but a lot of them are private. They're not sponsored by the school. They're sponsored by private people who come in, and it costs a little bit of money. It's not as expensive as it would be if you were going to someplace private,
mm-hmm.
but it's a few bucks. And sometimes right. if that's the deal for a kid, that's a good idea. They should give that
right.
a try.
Right.
I also got a message from somebody who's a great supporter, and he thanked me for talking about the way we talk to each other, which we did last night. So I want to touch base on that again to remind everybody to pay attention to how you address the ones that you love, and children in particular. I watched the show last night with Anderson Cooper, and of course it was excerpts from the movie Bully, which is a very very moving show, and it's a documentary. Of course, I've talked about it before, and it talks about school and home, and it's shocking how many parents, even though they kind of know what's going on, they don't know what's going on. So that was upsetting for me, and I shared that with Gary. He's one of the people involved with Bully. And I said, it was upsetting for me to see how many parents were living in la-la land, until they were shown exactly what was going on. So I think we need to stress again, if your kid's crying and doesn't want to go to school, you better find out what's going on. You better
right.
find out what's going on, because they're not just crying and not wanting to go to school for nothing.
That's right.
So there's that, and then there is the fact that these poor folks that lost children during the shooting of that documentary have moved on to do things that are amazing. The one husband and wife, he lectures all over. He's talked to thousands and thousands of kids and talked at thousands of schools. And he's talked about loving themselves and speaking up, and if somebody's abusing them, they need to tell somebody. And he goes around and hugs them all. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
But the sad part about it is is that he lost his little boy. And so now this is filling that void. So
right, because he didn't
it
realize
makes
that
you,
it was too late. Is this
yes.
why he thinks he lost his own child? Because he wasn't sensitive enough or aware enough in with his situation, so now he's trying to prevent that from happening to other people?
I don't know that he's taking that much responsibility personally. I'm sure he is to himself. He's not saying those things so much out loud, except for that he's remorseful that he didn't do more, but he's not really taken any kind of major responsibility for that, nor should he. But it's mostly what rips my heart out is now he's got all kinds of time to do something.
Oh boy, right, I see what you're saying, right.
And when he was 11 years old, when he killed himself on their living room floor.
Oh.
He was being bullied, and he fought back. He got suspended. He calls his mother, and his mother says, "We'll talk about it when we get home from work." When they got home from work, he was gone.
Wow.
So, you know, that in itself is heartbreaking because that kind of tells you that he was worried about what they were going to say, you know?
Right.
He was scared.
He didn't get a sense that they were going to be supportive.
Yeah. He got more of an idea, and at 11, you're pretty sensitive. He got more of
right.
an idea that he was in more trouble instead of, you know, going to get some support. And I'm pretty sure after watching this family and Bully and then again last night, that wasn't the case. But I think they were just trying to let them know that this was serious, but not that they felt, you know, like he had really done something so horrendous or anything. But when you're 11, you don't know.
Right. Right.
You know, when you're 11, yeah, and you're usually afraid you're the one that's going to catch hell. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
I don't think that, you know, that's a very good point that you just made. And I don't think that a lot of time parents or other adults take that into consideration, okay? In other words, you have adults with adult problems. You know, they can't pay the mortgage. They're,
mm-hmm.
they're being bullied at work by their boss. They're having adult problems. They're having marital problems, all these things. You know, and then they look at their kid who seems to be depressed, and it's like, you know, what could be bothering him? But what they don't understand is that as a child is growing up, they don't have the mental maturity to know that things are going to be okay. So when things go wrong in their world, it's like the end of their world for them. They haven't lived
yeah.
long enough to know that things will eventually work out. So whatever they're going through at that moment is like, that's it for them. They think that that's now the rest of their lives because
yeah.
they don't know that things will have a tendency to work out if you just wait another 24 hours. And it's
you're
so
exactly right. I'm so glad you brought that up because that is unbelievably true. Shell, unbelievably
so,
true. AJ, so, that I talk about
the,
all the time.
Right.
He says
that's
that all the time. You're ruining my day. You know, he'll come, one little thing happens and he'll go, you're ruining my day. Am I going to have to do this the rest of my life? He says things like that to us. And we all look at him and say, honey, no, don't worry about this. This is going to be fine. He goes, but this is like, and I'm like, I have to smile. And he goes, Graham, it's not funny. Don't laugh. So I have to be careful to not laugh. So, you know, but what you just said, you know, is so true, truer than a lot of grown-ups understand. That
yep,
that
yep.
little silly thing that seems like nothing to you is just so big to them, so unsurmountable
right.
to them.
Yeah, unsurmountable, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they don't have the mental maturity, they don't have the experience to understand that it's just all going to work out, you know. And it's, I remember when I was a kid, I mean, I look back at the things that I remember used to bother me, and I was like, oh my God, why did that bother me? But at the time it did, it was devastating, you know. And it just totally preoccupies you. It totally overwhelms you, you know. And like, you know, as an adult, it's a big nothing, but not when you're a child, not when you're 8 years old or 12 years old or whatever. These things are bigger than life when they happen to you and you're that young.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and to be honest with you, that's one of the problems that we're trying to solve today because some people never get past that.
Right, right.
For various reasons, they never get past that feeling of things being too high to get over, too
right,
big,
right.
too whatever. It's just too
yeah,
much
they
for them.
Develop it. They don't get any assistance. They're kind of left to themselves, to their own devices. They just get past it. And they never actually develop that ability, so they become an adult that's still in that panic mode and like, oh my God, you know, things are just falling apart around me. And they never seem to get a handle on situations and that, you know, hey, if you just kind of like just go through the steps, it'll all work out. And they never get there. They never get there emotionally.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And then of course, then you're left with the repercussions of an adult who is struggling with the mundane tasks of being a grown-up.
Right.
And often gets put in a place where there is criticism and judgmental attitudes from others. I'm sure adults that are listening right now know other adults in their life that are kind of like that, that everything is a big deal. They think they're the only one that's ever going to go through that, that this can't have ever happened to anybody else the way it's happening to me. And that's because as a young person, nobody ever helped them understand that, see, the next day when you wake up, do you even remember what you were upset about yesterday? I do that to AJ all the time. I said, is your world still falling down around you? And he goes, no, I'm over that, Graham. I'm over that. I say, okay. So, you know, every time I spend time with a really young person, I'm astounded by how much they teach me.
Oh, yeah.
Astounded. Yep. Because they have such an untainted outlook,
mm-hmm.
without any analyzation, without any, but what about this, but what about that? They're just, things are just what they see, what they hear, what they say. It's just as simple as that. And sometimes that is so refreshing when...
Right.
Especially if you're an overanalyzer like I can be sometimes. Not all the time, but I can overanalyze something until I no longer even know what it was I was thinking about.
Well, they kind of cut through all the nonsense. They're very direct, very honest, and everything's possible. I think that's the most refreshing
thing. Yes, that's the thing. Everything is doable. And everything is... available. So, yeah, it's a beautiful place to be, and it's a shame that the things that we have to talk about today that takes away some of that pure innocence with the things that are going on. Like I said the other day, I can't even imagine how I would have felt when I was 11 years old. When I was 11 years old, it was between 5th and 6th grade. And actually, I was very young when I started school because I have a September birthday. So when I turned, in September, I turned 11 and I started 6th grade that year. And I can't even imagine how I would have felt. I did lose a friend to cancer in 6th grade. And that in itself was like so hard for me to understand. I can remember dreaming about that, worrying about that. Every time, and my parents talked to me about it, but, you know, honestly, I don't know what I would have said either. But it was hard for me to understand. And how it was brought on is he was wrestling with his sister. And they were just kids, and they were messing around on the living room floor, and he hurt his leg. And the next thing you know, we find out that he had cancer in his leg, some kind of a growth or something, and it took his life. And so then every time I horsed around with Barbara or Joey or any of them, I was scared to death something was going to happen to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to get past that. But can you imagine finding out that one of your schoolmates in 6th grade took their own life? I can't even fathom that.
No,
this is happening to our kids all the time, those kind of things. And then... There, in most cases, I see schools that offer grief counseling. I said to a teacher one time, how many kids show up for grief counseling? She said, almost always none.
Really?
Yeah.
That's surprising. I would think that they want something like that was, divulged in a school or an announcement was made that something happened to one of their schoolmates. I would think that they would want to go for the counseling. I'm surprised that not that many go.
Well, that's because you're a grown-up and you know what the counseling is going to do for you. But what if you're 11? What if you're 11 and they're going to and the first thing they think, oh, they're going to ask me a whole bunch of questions. I'm not going to know what to say. I don't know what to say already, and they won't go. So I said to one of the teachers that I talked to, this happened in David's, and David is 40 now, so this was quite a long time ago, but one of his very closest friends he got a strange cancer that attacked his spine, and it made like a vine of growth all the way around his spinal cord. And he was in the hospital, and they did some treatments to him, and they just sent him home because there was nothing they could do for him. So he would come to our house and just sit, and we would all play Scrabble and stuff like that. And he was a very funny kid, very, very funny. And he was 15 years old when he passed. And the funeral home was filled with 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
And everybody handled it very well but me. I went home and probably cried for 3 hours, and I don't know whether I cried for Billy or cried for the fact that all those 15- and 16-year-olds were at a funeral for a friend.
Yeah.
You know, that for me was like...
The reality of it just overwhelmed you.
Yeah. It was just, you know, I remember thinking of myself, I was hurt that, of course, more hurt for my own children, I'd be lying if I didn't say that they had to go through that. But then when I went to the funeral and saw all those other kids, and I thought to myself, it's really not fair that they have to go to the funeral of a friend at this age. You know, it's just it. Now, yesterday, the funeral for our friend that passed this week was beautiful. And we're all happy that she's pain-free and okay. But she wasn't 15.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So a lot of stuff goes on for young people today that has to be considered when we're talking about them and talking about all the different things that happen in their lives and what seems like not a big deal to us and is like the end of the world for them. So I was hoping, I was in touch with somebody today via messaging, and I thought that they would call in tonight. I hope I do hear from that person. If you're listening, please, please call in. You don't have to talk about anything that you don't want to talk about. It would just be good for you to know that you have friends and you have people who care, because we do. And you could just talk and we'll listen, or you can ask us questions and we'll do the best we can to answer them. But if you're sitting out there and listening and you want to be heard, call in and talk. And that goes for any of you, but this person in particular, because I know this person is in a bit of pain, and I know that they're struggling with the things that are going on in their life. And the worst part about going through something like that is if you feel like you're alone. So that's the whole purpose of this show. There's no reason for anybody to feel like they're alone.
Right,
Shel?
Right. Absolutely. You know, I wanted to touch on the bullying at the workplace because of something that happened to me at my previous job. And in retrospect, I didn't handle it properly. So, but also, I'm glad that I didn't handle it properly at the time, because I'm so much happier at the job I have now. And if I'd handled it properly, I would probably still be at the other place and still not that happy with the job. But what happened was, I had started there. This was a manufacturing company up north in Florida. And after I started there, I got along with everybody in the staff. All right, I was very well respected. I had a very high responsibility position. And there was a manager at one of our off-location plants. It was about a mile from where we were. And he was, quite bluntly, he was incompetent. And everybody knew he was incompetent except the upper management. He was a schmoozer. He didn't run anybody. And I was under pressure. I was trying to get a particular project done. And he kept lying. He kept giving me information. And it wasn't that it was inaccurate. He would just out and out lie. He would tell me something. I had just been to the plant, saw where something was. So I called him on it one day. And he went nuts. He tried to get me fired. Wasn't successful. I wasn't fired that day, even though he tried to get me fired. So he went on a mission for the next year and a half to get me fired. And he kept talking in the upper management ear. Well, I didn't do anything about it. It's kind of like what you were talking about. I just kind of just kept my head down, kept doing my work, because literally everybody there liked me except this guy. So what happened was, he just really got tougher management, and I finally started having problems with them. And this is why one time I had made a comment about going to an HR person. The HR director at that time was a gentleman who was very tired, made it very obvious that he was looking to retire within the next month. He was very ornery. I mean, you couldn't talk to him about anything. So I really didn't have an advocate to go to. A younger woman had taken over the position, somebody that had gotten along with very well. And I am, like, 100% positive, if I had gone to her, before I ended up leaving the company, that she would have been able to stop me from being fired. I ended up being fired from this position. But I was very relieved. It was the only job I was ever fired from. I was actually very relieved when I got fired because I was that miserable. This man was making my job so difficult. Wasn't actually abusive to me to my face, but what he was doing is he kept changing my job function to the point where it was making it impossible for me to get anything done. And when I tried to tell other people in management, he had already been talking in their ear, and they said things about my job function that weren't true. And I said, well, no, that I'm not supposed to be doing that. So-and-so does that, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, you could tell that there was misinformation. If I had gone to the woman who became the HR director, I know that the situation would have turned out directly. She was very fair. She was very thorough. She would bring both parties in, kind of like what you would do. But I had reasons why I didn't go to her, and then by the time that I would have, I had already gotten fired. So in my particular case, I wasn't unhappy that I got fired because I didn't want the job anymore. So I kind of allowed it to play out. If I'd wanted to keep the job, I'm positive that I would have been able to work things out positively, but not with the first gentleman. And that's why I do recommend that people go to their HR directors, but they need to know the players. They need to know if it's really somebody who is going to be their advocate or not. And that would be the only thing I would say, giving that kind of advice, because I know that if I had gone to the gentleman, it would have backfired.
That's another thing that I think there's room for improvement, but of course we can't take on everything, but we did talk about this briefly the night that we talked about workplace bullying, and your HR department was set up to be for the employees. Human resources means resources for the staff, for the general population of the workplace. And they're supposed to be like the ombudsman between upper echelons and the rest of the working associates. So if you work in a department or if you work in a business place, a big one, I'm often put in mind of IBM because I'm from upstate New York. IBM was an amazing, enormous work provider for many years in upstate New York and other areas like that. And they had a big plant here in Florida that closed back in the early 90s. And I remember I had an uncle who was a big deal in IBM. That was way before the 90s, of course. That was when I was a little girl, so we're talking about in the 50s. And it was a big deal to have somebody on your side. And that's when they formed unions, and that's when you had spokespeople. And we've come a very, very long way since then. But what has happened is, like most circles, it loses its way. I don't understand why that is. A circle and the infinity for me always makes so much sense, and I always get a lot of enjoyment out of explaining a continuum of a circle or the continuum of the infinity logo to the younger kids. And yet, there's something about redundancy that makes it lose its strength. And that's what's happened with that. That was set up for a beautiful reason, so that work people couldn't be taken advantage of. Just like the unions and all the other stuff, it was set to protect the entry-level positions, the hard workers that kept a business alive.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's more like legal representation,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole different game. You know, it's no longer a place where you can go and say, this is what's happening to me. I don't know what to do. Can you help me? And I take pride in saying that even though my title was not human resources, I did a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
I did a lot of keeping people working together, understanding why they couldn't work together because something was going on, letting them talk it through. That's what human resources started out to be, not just somebody who pushed the papers.
Right.
Made sure you had your drug test and made sure we had your social security card and made sure you had a driver's license and made sure you weren't a mass murderer and then you could have a job. That's what human resources seems to do today. But that would help a lot for the bullying in the workplace.
Right. One of the things that you did that I thought was, well, brilliant, and I would...
Thank you, darling.
If there's other HR people listening that don't use this technique, they should take a piece of advice from somebody who can attest to the fact that it works very, very well, is that when you would have a staff member come to you complain about somebody else, even if it was somebody that you knew and trusted, you still wouldn't just take it at face value. You would always have to hear both sides of the story, so that's number one. And
mm-hmm.
and not all people that are in a responsibility of making decisions do that. A lot of people that are in positions of power will make a decision to take an action on a staff member with one side of it. They get a complaint and they make a decision, you know. So
mm-hmm.
That right there is inappropriate. And the other thing you did, which I thought was wonderful, is that you would get the two staff members together, and before letting them air their differences, you would tell each one of them why the other staff member was valuable and what they did for the company, so that
mm-hmm.
they would each get a new level of respect for each other before you started talking. And like you said, you don't have to like each other, but you have to respect each other. So
that's
and
right.
So is this, 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 and this. They're an integral part of this company, and then you look at the other one, and so-and-so does this, this, and this. You know, they're very important to us. Now let's see if we can work this out. So you would set the stage first to have them understand why each one of them was valuable so that they didn't all of a sudden come in there with a puffed-up attitude like, well, she's going to definitely do something for me because, you know, my job is so important. Now they've both been put in perspective. They understand they're both equally important. Now let's work out some kind of a compromise so the two of you can work together as a team again. And that
mm-hmm.
that was sort of the, you know, and that was the emphasis of the discussion, you know. And
mm-hmm.
people would leave there with a new sense of cooperation that they didn't walk in with because you chose to handle it that way. And it was very, very effective.
Well, and the truth of the matter is that often you don't know what somebody else does in a workplace. Often you're so busy and so wrapped up with what your position is. Well, that's why we get so many workplaces where everybody thinks they're the hardest worker in the place, right? I mean, you've come across that many, many times, right?
Yep.
I'm the only
yep.
one here who does anything. That's because
yep.
nobody ever says, you know what this person does? Did you know that this person does this, this, and this? And they're like, no, I had no idea.
Right,
so
right.
It is important to have a mutual, not just respect for the person, but for the person's work ethic
mm-hmm.
and who the person is to the company, and for the fact that any company, like any volleyball team, if they don't have a full team, they lose the game.
Right.
So
right.
if you aren't all playing like a team, it doesn't work. So when bullying starts, it's usually because of the insecurities of the bullier, not the bullied. It would be the person that's trying to find fault in everybody else. Chances are, like I said last night and last week when we talked about this, they point their fingers at other people so that nobody will look at them. And it's a sad thing, and it's a sad thing to see. And if you have any understanding of human nature and you see this, you recognize it. And it's sad because you want to take that person, put their head right between your hands and say, listen to me. You do not look any prettier because you just put black crayon all over her face. It did not make you more beautiful. You want to say that to them so they get the fact that what the other person does, didn't do, might do, could do, should do, has nothing to do with you. You still have to be on top of your game if you expect people to feel that way about you, because eventually everything comes out in the wash.
That's
everything.
Right.
And it may start out looking like somebody else is at fault or somebody else is to blame, but at the end of the day, the person who didn't hold up their end of the ladder, it shows. It always shows. So it's a sad thing, and it's a sad thing when somebody else gets hurt to their core because somebody else is just not doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's a very, very sad thing. All of this is awfully, not just sad, it's disappointing to think that we, the smartest creatures, supposedly, and I say that with a little bit of, I don't know. anyway, we're supposed to be the smartest species in the world. We still find time in our busy schedules to find fault and find reason to ridicule or hurt another human being. That makes so little sense to me, so little sense. If you have that much time on your hands, I'd like to see what your bedroom looks like.
Yeah, well, it's the whole thing with the, people that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, that whole thing. You know, you have so many people that will look outside of themselves and pitch stones at everybody else, and meanwhile, they never look through their own windows as to what's going on in theirs because it's more comfortable. Because if they look at their job performance, oh my God, they may actually have to change something. They may have to start doing things differently. And some people, not all people, and some people are very emotionally or mentally lazy. They don't want to make the changes. They don't want to be the one that have to make any changes. So they have to make everybody else around them the problem. It can't be them, because if it's them, they're going to have to start doing things differently, and they're very comfortable with their habits, you know?
It does
take a strength of character to be able to say, you know what, I made a mistake, I'll take responsibility for that, you know? And it also takes strength of character to humbly take credit for something without making people look bad, and there's a way of doing that, you know? I have no issue saying that I made a mistake with something, because, you know what, it's no big deal. It always shocks me when people are like, oh, no, I couldn't have done that. Why not? Are you human? You're not a machine, are you? You're not a computer. Anybody can make a mistake. Somebody brings a mistake to my attention, I'm always grateful for it. If somebody shows me something that's not correct, I'm like, oh, fantastic. I don't want something out there with my name on it. It's got a mistake on it. So if somebody I'm very appreciative. But I've had people that I've shown mistakes to, and I do it very politely, and they go nuts. It's not my mistake. I couldn't have done that. Well, I'm not sure about that, because it's got your name on it.
Well, you know, years ago there was a commercial that said, wouldn't every bit of work done be better if everybody had to sign their name to it?
And they showed
pictures of bridges with the guy's signature on it. They showed pictures of buildings with the guy's name on the side of it and everything.
I remember
I thought to my, I was very young when that came out, and I still thought to myself, what an awesome, awesome idea.
Yeah, I like that commercial. I remember that.
You know, because it's the truth. It really, really is the truth. We're much prouder, and we do a much better job if we think everybody knows it was our job.
Right, right.
You know?
Yes, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned that. That was a good commercial.
That was a great commercial. Well, the show is over, and I will see you tomorrow. But thank you a lot, and again, and I'm disappointed that my new friend didn't join us tonight. Let's hope he joins us on Monday.
Oh yeah, I hope he does too.
Yeah. All right, sweetheart. See you tomorrow morning.
All right. Good night, all.
Good night.